I wanted to give you hope, Catherine. Are you ready for a little bit of hope?
Sure. I need disappointment.
I got both hope and disappointment.
Oh, my God. Two sides of the same coin?
It's exactly that.
Okay, go for it. I'm ready for more.
I have made progress in cleaning up my office.
Oh, is this my hope?
This is your hope. If I can do it, you can do it.
Oh, gosh.
It takes time. It takes time. It takes effort. And it's still, you know, small incremental improvements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been working on this for months, right? I mean, the first brick I laid down, which was a big pain in the ass brick, was building that enclosure for my printers. Because that allowed me to put all my printing stuff in one place, which gave me a little bit of space to start moving stuff around and cleaning stuff up and cleaning stuff out.
Wait, literally a brick?
No, it wasn't a brick. It was a metaphor.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry. I was like, why bricks? I'm drinking coffee now. Go ahead.
You have a brick in your head. Okay, I'm just saying, if I can do it, you can do it. Now, on the flip side, one of the milestones I thought of this progress that I was making in getting my office sorted out, it's filled with bicycles, but most of them are hanging from the ceiling, which is good because they're out of the way.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks kind of artsy. I like it.
For the past 6 months, two of them have been on the floor, just leaning up against things because they don't have room to be stored anywhere.
All right.
One of those two got put on the ceiling yesterday. So now there's only one on the floor now, which is just makes it much easier to walk through the space and a lot easier to get the stuff because it was literally leaning up against a bookcase. And, you know, if it's leaning up against a bookcase, I can't get the bookcase.
Right.
And so it's my office isn't just, it's not a destination. You have to walk through it to get to my wife's office and get to the laundry room. So people are going back and forth all the time.
Yeah, it is a thoroughfare, the location in your house. Yeah.
So the flip side of it being great that I did this is that the bad side is that no one noticed.
That is awesome.
I'm sitting here and still stunned. It's been almost 24 hours since the bicycle that you literally had to walk around has been removed and no one has noticed.
Wow.
And I feel like I'm going to start punching people soon.
Why?
Because I do all this work and no one cares. So when you clean up your house, Catherine, no one's going to notice or care. Except you.
Right.
And maybe your dog. Dog
one,
or dogs?
One dog.
Oh, you were supposed to have a second one. What happened?
Oh, it was a tragedy.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I was supposed to go down and get the dog Saturday. Remember, we talked about it.
Right, yeah, that's why I asked.
I just couldn't get down there. I couldn't. There was some technical difficulties here with like finding someone to stay with my folks. I didn't want them to go down and stuff. We postponed it till Monday. And then my father had a medical situation over the weekend, and I had to take him into one of his doctors Monday, so I couldn't go Monday. So the breeder wrote me back and said, I think it would have been a great fit, but my sense is that if it could have happened, it would have happened by now. So take care.
Wow, that was kind of a shitty thing to do.
Everyone said that, and I was stunned. I mean, I felt like someone hit me in the gut, and so I texted her back. I'm like, what? Will you reconsider? Call me. And I tried calling her. Her voicemail was full. She's not responded.
I'm sorry.
Anything. No, I'm not. You know what? Because the dog was expensive and I missed the whole puppyhood again. She was 7.5, 8 months old, which would have been great because all the training and stuff was done. The chipping was done and et cetera, et cetera. But things happen for a reason.
Well, I guess that means there's more room for your 3D printer.
I'm not getting a 3D printer. You haven't seen this out. I hope that you're right, that things get better, because this is just...
Well, you have to work on it. It doesn't happen by itself. I have been working on it. Okay.
Yeah,
eventually you will see progress.
Yeah, me and Joe. Joe Grotto's been over here.
Eventually you will see progress.
Helping
But it takes
me.
Time. I've been working on it for months, and literally until yesterday, there was really nothing to show for it.
It is months long. It's just like a months long process, isn't it?
Well, the whole process, I think, is going to be years. But
I think so, too.
But it takes months to see any progress. And that's, you know, we're talking about houses that have, in a very American, very typically American-style fashion, just been piled up with crap for years because we buy stuff we don't need.
Exactly.
And worst yet, we don't get rid of stuff we don't need.
Exactly. Well, because every time I get rid of something that I don't need, like 3, 4, 6 months, 2 years later, I'm like, damn, why'd I get rid of that? I could have used it for X, you know? And so I tend to hoard shit, and it is becoming like a hoarder situation, not like worthy of the television show Hoarders.
Yeah, I don't think you're just in the normal American.
It's the American
overstuffed.
Hoard. Yeah,
you're overstuffed, but you're not hoarding yet.
But then I have pictures of my studio. No, not yet. But I have pictures of my studio when it was like functional. And it's like, how the hell did it go from so functional and so pristine and so organized to this? I mean, I couldn't walk back there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like everything else, it happened slowly, and then all of a sudden it just happened.
Oh, it's a critical mass.
Have this big, beautiful place. You just keep putting stuff in there, and then suddenly one day you can't walk around anymore. And there's nowhere to put the thing to move to give yourself any more room.
I know. I call it the Rubik's Cube.
I don't know what the name of the puzzles are, but I think a better analogy is the little flat puzzles you get that with the tiles that you slide around, and there's a picture, and there's one tile missing, so you have one slot where you can move the tiles around. That's the better one, because you got to move the whole thing around to make it work.
Right, that's exactly. It's like you move this. Yeah.
And then you still have the same number of tiles that you started with.
That's my fear, but I have filled.
You got to start smashing the tiles.
Well, I did fill up my recycle bins twice now. And I have two.
Oh, wow. There you go. That's
and
a start.
And those are recycled. It was like done, that was just some crap that was laying around here. And like all that crap I was saving for like garbage art and stuff. It's like, I'm not going to do anything with this. I mean, the truth of the matter is I'm not. And more boxes will come. So I literally had so much cardboard, and it's just like, oh my God, this has got to go. So that was a huge like space declutterish thing. And so that's
Catherine,
gone.
Yeah. Catherine, the secret is there's always more trash out there. Just literally just at your fingertips. There's always more trash.
No kidding. But you know the thing, like we talked about Temu last time and their shipping, they don't send anything in boxes. It comes in a big orange bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last two orders.
Wrapped in foam? Wrapped in air foam?
No, like it's just a big orange bag.
Huh, okay. I don't know.
It's literally just a... How's it safe? I don't know. Everything.
I mean, the stuff I've ordered from China comes very diligently wrapped in essentially bubble wrap.
No, there's no bubbles. There's nothing. All the little
stick
things.
With Ali. I think I'm going to stick with AliExpress then. Thank you very much, because their stuff comes really well. And I checked out Temu. I was on there for at least half an hour, and I found nothing of interest. Zero.
I know. Well, I ordered, but two of my orders that I ordered one day and one the next day. Came, but they came together, so it was like their zero carbon shipping or whatever. So they combined them or whatever. That's what they said. Sure. I know. It's like, but they're coming
China.
From Canada.
Zero
they're coming
carbon.
From everywhere, wherever. But I got everything.
They're coming from China.
Oh, okay. Well, the customs thing always says Canada, so maybe it comes from China to Canada and then Canada to me.
It could be that there's a warehouse in Canada, but generally. The whole point of Temu is you're ordering directly from the manufacturer.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, but I've not ordered anything that was breakable. It's all soft stuff and just, weird stuff. And so, I'm okay happy with the things. Like, I will tell you that the dog harness that I got for $3 was identical. Identical.
So far. Things, there are ways you can make things that look identical to other things, but are in fact not identical. Materials and manufacturing techniques may look the same, but are not.
Well,
I'm just saying that these are things, especially when you're talking structural and material wise, they can look the same, but not be the same.
Well, let's hope they're the same. I mean, I have a 10 pound now Chihuahua. I don't know that he's going to bust a move out of this thing. But the other place that I was ordering from, I mean, all their stuff was made in China, too. So who's to say it isn't the same? I mean, the stitching is the same, everything.
Okay, Catherine. Could be the same. Yeah. It could be the same, but you're not guaranteed that it is. If you order from a reputable company, you have a reputable company to deal with. You have a company who's
going to stand by it.
Brand is on the line.
Right.
Right, they're on the hook. If you're just ordering from some random manufacturing plant in China, what are you going to do, sue them if it breaks?
No, but
and
my
really
dog doesn't
you
go
can
anywhere.
You can make things look exactly the same as something else, but it not be the same thing.
Okay.
Not be the same quality materials, not be the same quality manufacturing.
Well, that's disheartening.
That's real. That's what that is. That's real.
Yeah. But anyway, long story short, it looks
the
same.
That was not short. Okay.
It wasn't short. But yeah, so far I'm okay, happy with stuff. I think some of their sizing is like Asian sizing. You know, the clothing is interesting.
So I start my day off with Instagram, which may not be a healthy habit, but I like it because I like to follow creative people on there.
Mm-hmm.
And 3D printing news and stuff like that. So I see a lot of stuff that people are creating. And okay. That helps me get the day started off. And on a good Instagram day, I'm usually pretty excited to start creating my own stuff. Because
okay.
I see other people creating stuff, and it just it rubs off on me.
Mm-hmm.
And today was mostly successful, but there was this one really whiny post that I thought was worth talking about.
Okay.
There were a number of small business creatives on there complaining about how Instagram has ruined their businesses because they've changed the algorithm yet again.
They keep changing the algorithm. Yeah.
And I can't get over how annoyed these people make me because they are, it's like building your house on a sandbar and then complaining when it gets washed away every three
right?
months. The Instagram has done this since day one. They have changed, well, I should, not since day one, since Facebook or Meta bought them, they have
right?
been messing with the algorithms and generally
right.
not in a good way, right?
Right.
So,
right.
If you choose to build your business platform on one of these platforms that you do not own and have no control over, don't complain when things change because you're an idiot for not knowing that that was exactly what's going to happen because it's exactly what's happened for the past 20 years with these platforms. This is what these
right.
platforms do. They don't care about you. Why would they care about you? They don't care about your small business. They're a big business trying to make money.
Exactly. But I think that people do build their brand, or like they rely on it for a good portion
yeah.
of their advertising and, you know, the in your face moments and being part of the algorithm is very important. And how did they change it again? There was some like suggestion. I ran into
I don't follow it anymore because it changes and I just don't care anymore.
Right.
Because
there was something about reels.
So and,
yeah. You had to do yeah. reels instead of pictures and. It's like, you know, it just turns into TikTok and it's not great. I don't know. The whole thing annoys
it does not
me.
TikTok is still much better.
Oh, of course.
Because it's Chinese.
Chinese.
All right. So should we talk about art? Are you ready or do you want
to? I'd like to talk about Roy Lichtenstein.
Talking about whiny little people and their whiny little problems. Oh, my God.
Right.
So Roy Lichtenstein was a 20th century painter, American painter who...
Mm-hmm.
would take comic book strips and paint them on these big paintings.
Mm-hmm.
It's pop art. It's popular
right.
art, and he's recreating it for his own purposes, reinterpreting it. And I find his work to be visually mildly stimulating,
mm-hmm.
intellectually mildly stimulating,
mm-hmm.
but also kind of bland. And certainly not worth the $165 million that some morons are willing to pay for it.
Yeah, that's what blows me away. I mean, that really does.
And just to paint the picture of a Roy Lichtenstein painting, it's a moderately sized canvas. I don't know, what are they, 3 or 4 feet across? Some are big.
Some are big.
Moderate mm-hmm. size. Some are much bigger than that. But he literally just takes a comic book sell from one of the either a strip or a comic book mm-hmm. page and then blows it up, which means mm-hmm. you see all the dots, the what's it called, the Ben Ray dot, I can't remember what it's called, but it's all blown up out of size, so it's a bit of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody recognizes that, you know, it's a bit of an homage, it's a bit of a joke, it's, and he usually puts in these weird little sayings in the dialogue bubbles.
Okay,
so that's the picture that we paint, that he paints.
I recognized his work and I'd known of his work, but I never connected the dots that he was taking like an actual cell or whatever from a comic book and recreating it or interpreting it. Actually, until I read this article, I really didn't know that. I mean, I feel so silly, but
I don't think it's widely known that
you know?
He was mimicking what he saw. And I totally understand his work process. He's going through his day, either not necessarily even intentionally looking for
mm-hmm.
these comics. Because, you know, it used to be you would get the paper. And in the daily paper, and especially on the weekends, mm-hmm. they would have comic book strips in them. I mean, mm-hmm. comic strips in them. Mm-hmm. So you would just see these throughout your day.
Right.
And this stuff was literally disposable illustration. That's all it ever was. That's what made it pop art. It's, you know, it's popular culture art, you know, art mm-hmm. and craft that is coming out of the popular culture.
Right.
My thinking of it is he's seeing these things in his day, and it's kind of like making a collage out of things that he sees.
Mm-hmm.
Based on his paintings, I think I can kind of see his mindset. He sees an interesting element mm-hmm. in one of these cells, comic mm-hmm. cells, and that's what he's drawn to, and he wants to replicate that. And he probably thinks about it for a while and thinks about how to best situate it. But apparently that upsets people, Catherine.
Well, it upset the original creators. And I can see both sides of this. I really can. And it also instantly resonated with me, like all of the stuff we were talking about AI and the AI generation and like the sampling, okay. You know, I mean, really, it felt oddly aligned with that because, you know, this one guy, like he's like, you know, strip artist, Iceman said it's called stealing. You know, he's like, I worked like a dog on this stupid page and this guy has 20 mil to show for it. If it wasn't so tragic, it would be funny.
It was his job to do that. Not Rick Lichtenstein's job, but what was the guy's name? I honestly didn't pay attention to anyone's
Iceman.
Name. Iceman's. Yeah. That was your job. You know, some people go to the mill and mm-hmm. mill wood all day long mm-hmm. or cast plastic or do foundry work. You went and had a little bit easier time than people who went to the coal mines. You sat down at your desk and you drew all day. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. let's all cry for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's just your job. There's nothing special about that. That's just a job.
Well, he did it for 75 years. Well, I mean, a lot of people can't work for 75 years. You can when you're drawing. I mean, that's beautiful. Yeah. You know, but they said now that like there are more than 30 comic artists that feel that they were appropriated by Lichtenstein and they were cheated of recognition. So, I mean, I think I know how you feel about this, and I think I might feel a little differently. But like I said, I can see both sides of it. I think some of his work is really more than just appropriation. And it is appropriation, and I don't see it as necessarily changed fundamentally to protect it from like a copyright standpoint, even though the law has cited otherwise. So
I don't know if there's been any challenges to it. They don't cite any challenges. The article wasn't, I didn't think the article was particularly good. They did
no,
have
no,
one.
No, there was a lot. Of, yeah, go ahead.
They only had one viewpoint from the other side. It was all completely skewed for the illustrators being annoyed that they mm-hmm. that Lichtenstein was copying their work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The one counterpoint was Bradford R. Collins, professor of art history at the University of South mm-hmm. Carolina, said, and I quote, "It's not plagiarism,
mm-hmm.
it's appropriation. With plagiarism, you're stealing somebody's work and using it for the same purpose they did," end quote.
Mm-hmm.
He was clearly not using it. He's not drawing his own comic book strips. He's taking it and putting it on the wall. And the idea that he's actually copying them directly is also preposterous. If you the article had two examples right in the article showing the original comic cell and then Lichtenstein's quote appropriation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously deeply referential to the original, but also completely remade. He's literally like downgrading the quality of most of the drawings in these things. The drawing doesn't look as good. I understand his thinking behind it. He's trying to dumb it down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
make it even look more disposable than it was. Because the original drawings, in a lot of cases, are very nice drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want it to be just a nice drawing. He wants it to be more disposable pop art. So I get where I see the little changes he's making. And the mm-hmm. funny thing is, one of the illustrators even calls this out. It's like, he's not even very good at this because he can't even copy the ellipse on the plane jet,
right.
on the cone of the plane. It's
right,
like,
right.
Dude, you're missing the whole point. He obviously did that intentionally. There's no reason. If he wanted to, he could have taken a picture and projected it onto the canvas and drawn it exactly just using mm-hmm. a projector. But he clearly is manipulating the elements for his own end.
I think what you're talking about is like the piece by Russ Heath. It was an airplane, like kind of getting blown yep. up, and then the word says "bam" or "blam."
Blam,
blam, blam. And so the "blam" is like sideways, and then Lichtenstein puts it more readable. But you know, the impact section, the number 3, the little I don't know if it's the guy coming out or oil coming out. It, to me, it's a change substantively enough to be unique? Possibly.
I think so, because it completely changes the medium. It completely changes the intent of the creation of it.
Okay.
And it, you know, it's not just a clone copy of it at all. I mean,
No, it isn't.
Seeing it actually improves my opinion of Lichtenstein because I see his process.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm imagining things, but I think I see what he saw in the original cell, which was Blam. You're going through the comics and you see just a weird thing to put in there. Why is the crash of an airplane make the sound Blam?
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre. That's what I would take from it. And that's what I want to create my piece around. So these people are losing their minds that he's doing this. He's basically kind of copying, but he's really using their work as a starting point.
Right.
I wonder what these people would think. You know, don't let these people see collages where people are actually cutting their work out and using them as a collage. What do they think about that?
They think it's plagiarism. They think it's wrong. And
collage art has a long history too.
Yeah, collage art has a long history, but you have to be very careful. Very careful, because you know I did a lot of collages not too long ago, and I wanted to do a piece with some comic books, and so I went to one of these Bookmans or something, and they have like a section of like old comic books or used comic books, and I just looked through and I found interesting things, and then I started thinking about the copyright and using this and like some of the Marvel stuff, and I just thought I can't do it, and I didn't want to, and actually I felt bad. Like cutting up someone else's work. I did.
You shouldn't feel that bad. Like they're mass produced. You shouldn't feel badly about
it. I know, but it felt wrong. There was like some gut feeling. And I thought what I should have done was like pull a Lichtenstein, like just draw my own stuff based on these images and then collage that. And I ended up, I mean, I had quite a stack. I mean, I spent like close to $50 or so on these books. And I just returned them to Bookmans. I'm like, do you want them? And they're like, yeah. And so I got a credit and I bought some yoga books or something. This was several years ago. But yeah, I really had a problem cutting up like their work and sticking it on mine. And I just thought, I can't do it.
The American art industrial complex has successfully quashed your art creative inspirations. What is it called?
The American art industrial?
I don't know. I just made that up.
Oh, I liked it. I want to use that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, please do. It's all yours.
I can't remember what it was. Oh, so there's no copyright infringement. Okay.
Yeah, not for me.
Not for me. But, the second image, I don't like how it
really seems like they've gotten to you, because these are mass produced. There's nothing special about them.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow the whole copyright and ownership concept has drilled down so far into your brain that you can't cut these things up.
No, I couldn't.
Disposable work. It's disposable. Printed stuff is disposable.
But it was also
comic books are disposable.
But isn't art disposable?
Yes, I think so. But that's a different discussion.
Right, that is. I think we should explore that more in the next podcast. I have some ideas for that.
Okay, write it down.
I'll get it to you today. But no, I just, in the second example, The Girl in the Window, from 1963, and then it was Hi Iceman's private secretary comic of the same year. And that is, I find that more significantly different. The background's different. And so I think that's definitely homage. I don't see any issue with that one. I just don't.
And that one's the same thing. Again, I see... It's the hands. The hands are crossed in kind of a funny way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably what drew him. And he said, oh, that's interesting. That's a weird thing. He was drawn to it and he recreated it in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I want you to tell me if this is kind of similar, because this is what happened to me years and years and years. This is like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
I've been designing websites since the 90s. And I've been doing that because I'm a product designer. And I was using it as basically an online portfolio. So I would put up, I would design stuff. This is back when I was in school. And I would put it on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a web, I became a web designer. And I started understanding how these things work. So I started looking at my server logs. And a server log is just basically telling you what's happening with the files on your website. That's the individual pages, and those are the images and any whatever else you might have on there. I did, you know, it kind of gives you an idea of how many people are visiting your website, because it tells you any given page how many times it was downloaded, how many times it was accessed.
Okay.
And so one time it was really weird because, you know, you'd get a few hundred every month. Was pretty normal. Mm-hmm. One month I had like tens of thousands of requests for this one file. Hmm. And it wasn't a page. It was an image. I was like, what the heck is going on with this? Because in order to see the image, you have to load the page because the page is embedded in the image. So you load the page. So you get the load. It loads the page and it loads the image. So you would see this. It should be relatively similar. The number of times the page was loaded and the number of times the image on that page was loaded should be about the same. It wasn't. Okay. It was. You know, the image was being accessed thousands of times. And so you can go to another part of the server logs and you can see who is accessing this. And usually it's just a list of IP addresses. So like if you're accessing my website, I don't actually see your IP address. I see the IP address of your internet service provider. So that doesn't really tell me very much. But sometimes if another website is accessing it for whatever reason, you can see that. And in this case, I could. I could see the exact website that was calling this image. So I looked at the website. It was a Chinese website for recumbent bicycles. And they were using one of my images as their logo.
Really?
So I had designed a 3D design of a recumbent bicycle, put it on my website, and then someone in China found it and said, hey, that's really cool. Let's use it for our logo. And they didn't just download it and then upload it to their own server. They're actually just calling it off of my server, which is kind of weird. But you know, without that, I would never have known. And I spent a couple of days figuring out what the hell I was going to do about this. And then eventually I said, I don't care.
Mm.
Let them use it. I thought maybe it would be worth trying to contact them and say, hey, look, if you want to use it, just download it and put it on your own server.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not causing me anything because, you know, I have unlimited bandwidth, so it doesn't matter to me so much. But, you know, for your own use, you know, it might be easier. But they were literally reusing my work on their website as their logo.
Wow.
And eventually I realized I just didn't care.
Wow.
Does that make me weird?
No, I don't think that makes you weird. I think that makes you probably unique.
And is that the same thing? Is that a similar thing? People reusing my work in a completely different way?
Why did you make the bike?
I was in design school. It was part of a class. I was designing a recumbent bicycle. I was putting on my website to sell my portfolio. I wanted someone to hire me as a web designer. And this was a website in China that looked like, this was before Google Translate allowed me to translate the website. But as far as I could tell, it was basically a website talking about recumbent bicycles.
And they didn't change the work in any way?
Not in any way. They were literally just not even cutting and pasting. They were just calling it from the my website and just right there. It's exactly the same image, nothing different about it.
Actually, and they didn't ask for your permission, obviously.
Nope.
I think that's actually worse. And I could see why you didn't care and you're in school and you're not going to make an issue of it. But I mean, you did labor over it, and it's just that expression and that, you know, ownership and your intellectual property, and you figured everything out. And then someone just said, yeah, I mean, it wasn't in the public domain. You know, was it used for a similar purpose? No, it wasn't like a school project or anything, but they use it for advertising. So they were going to benefit from your work. So I think it is the same, and I think it's worse.
I put it out there.
Would you care now?
It wasn't hurting me. Well, I guess, I don't know if this is the same thing, but I haven't done this yet, but sometimes I design things for my 3D printer, and I haven't designed anything that is useful enough for other people to put it on the web.
Okay.
But there are plenty of places if and when I get to the point where I make something that I think would be useful to other people, I'm definitely going to upload it to Thingiverse or printables.com where other people can come and download it and print it for themselves. I have no problem. I just haven't found, I don't think I've designed anything yet for the printer that would be useful in that situation. But I have no problem sharing stuff with people for free that I've made. It just, you know, I understand. I would absolutely love to be able to design something that I could sell to people. That'd be great. I just don't feel like I've gotten to that point yet.
Okay. Because, you know, people get wigged out, for lack of a better term, over far less. You know, and I told you the story.
I think they get their underwear in a twist, and I don't think it's appropriate.
I don't know. Yeah, well, you know, I told you the story. I don't know if we've discussed it on the podcast. A friend of mine, her daughter had a cute little site on Etsy whereby she was making little things that dangle over a crib, like for, you know, the, what are they called? I don't know. They just dangle and the baby's looking at them.
Mobiles.
And so she was, you know, stuffing these things and hand doing it. It was an incredibly laborious process. And she didn't sell them for that much. They weren't that expensive. And there's like a ton of people doing the same thing on Etsy, because on Etsy, there's a ton of people doing the same thing in any
right.
anything you're looking at. So I don't know if she derived inspiration or whatever, but there was this issue of a cow on a moon. So she made her own version of a cow on a moon, or a cow like jumping over the moon. Right. I don't even know. It was like
a
cow.
That's a standard story. Look, young person.
Yeah, cow on a moon.
Trope. And so, it's a standard trope.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, what I want to follow up on with this is to try to find this documentary. Did you see there's a documentary about this?
That was the whole point of the article. And I'm so non-interested in it now.
I am very interested.
On a
I know
false
that's
premise.
Well, that's why I'm glad we're different, because I do want to track this down. It's called Wham Blam, Roy Lichtenstein and the Art of Appropriation. And it shows, you know, the original comic artists and how they lived like these austere lifestyles, as said, and possibly even destitute. And then his painting sold for millions of dollars. And so, but in the documentary, I guess there's a quote from the article, and I quote the article. It says, in the documentary, a lawyer argues that Lichtenstein's work would be considered transformative because in most instances, he added new elements rather than making an exact copy. And that's pretty much in line with, you know, even that Etsy story. It's not an exact copy. You know, like I said, you can draw a mouse with suspenders, but you can't make it look like Mickey Mouse. And it's
and
just,
I would
you
say,
don't.
As far as them using the idea that they were destitute, I don't think that's really relevant to this part of the story, in that
right.
whether they copied or not. What that's relevant to is the working conditions in the 20th century America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a fully employed person, you should be able to get by. And I do wonder, you know, in the middle part of the century, for people in that socioeconomic class, they generally didn't have that much trouble getting by because things were a lot cheaper.
Things were a lot
so
cheaper.
So I don't know. I don't know if I buy this destitute thing.
Well, you know, it's all for, you know, there's drama. But, you know, we can withhold judgment on that until we see. I really do want to watch the documentary.
Have fun.
Have fun. But just, you know, kind of before we close this up, I mean, do you see any connection or any similarities or any like threads, be they so thin, to the AI art and the generation of images and taking someone else's work as a training tool for these AI modules or AI?
I didn't until you mentioned it. I think it was an mm-hmm. interesting point. I don't think it's like mechanically connected, but intellectually it's an interesting connection. Mm-hmm. One could make an artwork around it. of course, sure. I said that facetiously, but as soon as the words came out of my mouth, I'm thinking, actually, you could. You could upload some of the cells, a comic book cell, and then ask some of the some of the tools to make something new out of it based mm-hmm. on that thing, because that's one of the dynamics of the AI image generation tools, is that you can upload something as a source material.
Mm-hmm. Because I see this as the comic book cells. And we're calling them cells. I don't know if that's the correct term, but these little snapshots. And well, they're just like images.
Well, it's a cell.
It's a cell.
These are all individual as opposed to a strip.
Because those served as inspiration and, you know, source documents, so to speak, for Lichtenstein, you know, pretty much analogously like this training mod, you know, the training stuff for AI.
I don't think it's analogous at all. Intellectually, I think it was an interesting connection to make.
Uh-huh.
And spiritually, I think there may be a connection to it, but I don't think it's analogous, like I was saying, mechanically. Can you hear the dogs barking in the background?
I can. I think it sounds cute.
Okay, good. Oh, you can. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Because for one thing, we can actually trace specifically where Lichtenstein is getting his ideas
right.
from.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's a good point. Fair point.
And we can see and understand how he's transforming them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's different. But like I said, I thought it was a really interesting connection mm-hmm. that you made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and possibly worth exploring artistically. What if I put a Lichtenstein in and try to get the original back out of it? You know, how can I prompt it to getting the original cell that he based it on out of it?
That'd be interesting.
In the style of Popeye.
In the style
basically
of Popeye.
Improve his drawings. Oh, and the only other thing I had to say on this topic was, as far as pop art goes,
right?
Lichtenstein, to my mind, is pop art, whereas Warhol
yes.
really isn't. And also, Because you know, Warhol was like two notes. He had the camp, the soup cans, and his prints, like the Monroe prints, and
right,
the prints
right.
like those.
That's always what I think of, right?
And I feel like even though Lichtenstein's only ever doing the comic book thing, he has a lot of different iterations of it. Mm-hmm. He says it in a lot of different ways. So I feel like he's a lot more representative, a lot better representation of pop art.
I would agree with that. I would agree with
and
that.
And also, if these guys are having such problems with him, with you know these illustrators with Lichtenstein mm-hmm. taking their work, how does Campbell's Soup Company feel about Warhol? Like, because Warhol did just copy a Campbell's soup can.
He
just
did.
Just straight up copied it. It just there's nothing interpretive about it whatsoever. He just painted a big soup can on the canvas.
Mm-hmm. And they are
big. That
seems
worse to me. That seems worse to me.
It does seem worse.
Because it's a lot lazier. I mean, there's no transition whatsoever.
I think Campbell's might have liked it. I mean, I can't speak for Campbell's, but they might have liked it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt when the guy took my stuff in China. It's like, oh, he thought it was good enough to steal.
Thank you. Borrow.
I felt like he was good enough. I feel like he was borrowing it. Really? Because, again, it wasn't taking anything away from me. But anyway.
Did you ever do a drill down to see if they were still using the logo?
I haven't. I looked for maybe a couple months and then just lost interest.
Okay.
And I'm sure, you know, everything comes and goes. It's all gone.
Right.
Now.
Right. It's all gone. Oh, gosh. It's all gone just like the podcast today.
Yes.
Done.
Forever.
Not forever.
And ever. And ever.
No.
And, you know what that's a reference to?
No, I don't.
The Shining, the little girls, come and play with us forever and ever and ever.